A moment or minutes or hours passed. I forced my eyes open. Rain leaned over me, brow furrowed with concern. I was hallucinating, clearly, or dreaming again. Someone pried my hands free and I let out a choked cry. "It's all right," Rain murmured, leaning close to me. I hated these dreams. The ones where I dreamed of the way Rain had once looked at me, when we fought together in the Kajari. Like his heart was outside his body. Made it hard to reconcile all he had done to me when he looked at me that way. "You're safe," he whispered, as he gathered me in his arms, and I faded away. Chapter 27. Araya. I opened my eyes from a mercifully dreamless sleep. My head was throbbing, and my body hurt even worse. Coarse linen rubbed against my cheek. I was in a plain little bedchamber, a desk, a chair, a crooked table. Behind me, someone was moving around. I could hear the snap of a fire and the hiss of something boiling and the smell of something delicious. I tried to roll over and was met with a stab of pain so sharp I let out a little strangled sound that was intended to be a fuck, but instead sounded more like fuck. Footsteps circled the room, approaching me.
"Well, look at you,"
Rain said.
"So bright and cheerful when you wake up."
I tried to say fuck you and coughed instead.
"Oh, I still heard that."
He sat at the edge of my bed. It was so rickety that his considerable weight made the entire thing shift to one side. I choked out,
"Where are we?"
"One of the crown homes in the east. It's, seen better days, but it's safe, quiet, and closer than Sivrnash."
"How long have we been here?"
"Little less than a week."
I started, and Rain raised his hands.
"We kept you sedated for a while. Trust me, that was for the best."
I didn't love the idea of Rain's men carting around my unconscious body for a week. As if he could read my face, he said,
"Don't worry, it was just me."
That did feel like a relief, though I didn't want to examine too closely why.
"Where are the others?"
"Misha's here. The Bloodborne are in Lahore with Keturah and her guards, getting it under control."
Lahore. It all came back with overwhelming detail. The fire, and Evelina, and the sword, and...
"I killed Evelina,"
I said, not quite intending to speak aloud.
"She..."
"Strung you up in a basement? Yes, I know."
The basement. The tower. The sword. The... Panic. I touched my chest, eyes going wide.
"I found something in the tower. I found..."
"This?"
He reached for the bedside table and withdrew a carefully wrapped object about the size of his hand, flat and circular. He opened the cloth covering, revealing the moon pendant. The last time I'd seen it, it had been covered in Evelina's blood, but now it was pristine.
"You were crawling for it when I found you, even half dead."
He quickly covered it and set it back on the table, wincing and rubbing his hand.
"The minute I tried to touch it, I realized what it was."
"I don't know if I do know what it is, just that it's...
special."
"His. It was his. More than that, it was... it has to do with whatever Vincent was trying to hide."
This certainty came to me with an unexpectedly strong flood of satisfaction. There was so little I understood about my father. Finding even one puzzle piece seemed like a triumphant victory, even if it only led to more questions.
"Probably,"
Rain said.
"All the better that Septimus doesn't know about it. I'm glad it's here with us instead of with him."
He seemed shockingly unconcerned with it. My eyes narrowed.
"I'm surprised it's still here, and that you didn't fly off to Sivrnage with it. This was what you were looking for, wasn't..."
You are fucking dying, he snapped. I had more important things to worry about than your father's games. He clamped his mouth shut, like he'd just said something he didn't intend to. That'll burn, he muttered, and rose to go stir the pot over the stove. More important things. He returned, carrying a plate piled with steaming meat and vegetables. Here, eat. I'm not hungry, I said, even as my mouth watered. It's delicious. You want it. Trust me. Arrogant. But my stomach rumbled. I had to admit, the smell was incredible. I took a bite and almost melted back into the bed. Mother fucking damn him. I took another bite and another.
Was I right?
Rain said, infuriatingly smugly. I said between bites.
I'll take that as delicious, Rain. Thank you for this meal cooked with love and also for saving my life.
A joke. It was a joke. Still, my chewing slowed. I set aside the plate, already almost half empty, and turned to Rain with a hard stare. He must have thought I ran away. It would have been a reasonable assumption. You came to find me, I said. His smile faded.
Is that really so surprising?
I thought you'd think I just...
Oh, I did think.
But you still came after me. Why? He let out a sound between an exhale and a scoff. What? I said.
I just... Nothing. Just turn around so I can check your wings.
My wings? The thought made the blood drain from my face. Oh, goddess, I'd been so disoriented, the pain so constant, that the terrible reality of what had happened to them hadn't yet sunk in. They had been nailed through, many times. He settled behind me.
Give me some room back here.
I obeyed, wincing as I edged forward on the bed, my legs folded beneath me. He let out a breath through his teeth and my stomach turned. My new wings, the only gift of these last horrible months, shredded. I choked out, bracing myself for the answer. How do they look?
I'm glad you killed that depraved bitch. If she'd been alive when I got there.
He didn't need to finish the sentence. My throat was thick. So it's bad?
She nailed you. To a fucking wall.
I couldn't spirit them away. I couldn't.
It's hard to do. Harder than getting them out, and nearly impossible if they're injured, even for those who were born with them.
I should have made sure I taught you that before I left you. That was stupid of me. His voice softened at that, and I winced a little. I don't need pity. Tell me the truth. My words wavered a little despite my best efforts. They're ruined, right? Silence. Horrible silence. The bed shifted. Rain leaned around me, turning my head by my chin so I was looking into his face.
That's what you think? That you'll never fly again?
My face must have said enough. I might have expected his expression to soften, but instead it grew harder, like I'd offended him.
You're made for this guy, Aurea. Never let anyone take that away from you. Of course you'll fly again.
He released me and returned to my back. Under his breath, he muttered,
like I'd ever let that happen.
My exhale was shaky with relief. So they'll heal?
It'll take some time, but they will heal. They already look a hell of a lot better than they did.
They will heal. I had never heard three more beautiful words. Rain said them like he'd will it into truth if he had to. I heard rummaging behind me and the sound of something unscrewing. A jar, maybe? I tried to look over my shoulder with limited success. What's that?
Medicine. You're due.
I couldn't turn enough to see what Rain held, at least not without more pain than I was interested in. But I eyed the slight glow against the bedside table. It was good stuff, whatever he'd gotten. There was a long, awkward silence.
Do you mind if I...
he asked.
Touch me. He'd have to touch me. I could get Misha if you want, he said. She's out right now, but...
No, I said curtly. It's fine. You've already been doing it anyway.
It's going to hurt, probably.
It's fine. My body seized. My vision went white. Fuck, I breathed.
Thought it would be better if you didn't have a warning.
Oh, I recognized that line. I half smiled, half grimaced as he moved on to another cut. So, this is revenge, I said. I understand now.
Got me. You did a good job patching up my back, though. I'll return the favor. Promise.
A lump rose in my throat as I thought about that night for the first time in months. The night Jasmine had tortured Rain for hours in the wake of the attack against the Moon Palace. So much about the memory now felt different, more complicated. Must have been hard for you that night, I said.
Getting stitched up or getting tortured?
The questioning. You didn't break. Jasmine's methods were thorough, honed to perfection for their intended purpose, and that purpose was getting information out of unwilling participants.
I wasn't lying, he said. I wasn't responsible for the attack on the Moon Palace.
I peered over my shoulder and shot him a flat look. He huffed a laugh.
I guess I've earned that face, but I'd come too far to let one woman with a knife bring me down.
Then, after a pause,
well, that woman with a knife. Met another one who was a whole different story.
I bit my lip as he applied another well-timed dab of medicine, but the pain was a welcome distraction. So, has it been worth it? I asked. Being the Nightborn King. His hands paused, then resumed.
Does it count as bad bedside manner if you're the one in bed, trying to make us both equally uncomfortable?
I shrugged and immediately regretted the way the movement jostled my wings.
Fine, he said. I'll keep it interesting for you, since I know you need the distraction. Was it worth it? I saved the Rishon people from 2 centuries of subjugation. I took back what was rightfully mine. I got revenge upon the man who killed thousands of my people. I even get to wear a crown in front of the pricks who once treated me as a slave.
All things I expected him to say. All things that I knew were true.
That's what I would say to anyone else who asked, he said. But it's not anyone asking. It's you. And you deserve the truth, if you want it.
He moved on to another wound. I barely felt it. I'd regret it if I let him keep going. I knew that whatever he said to me would hurt, would be complicated. And yet I said, one honest thing.
I don't know if it was worth it.
The words came fast, low, in a rough exhale, like they'd been pressing on the backs of his teeth for far too long.
The night Nekulai lost his throne, I just wanted to burn it all down. I never wanted this. Feels like it's all cursed. This crown. Maybe the only way to survive as a ruler of this place is to become just like the ones who came before you. And that terrifies me. I'd kill myself before I let that happen, and I hope that if I couldn't, you'd do it instead.
It was more of a confession than I expected. I had to force the lightness into my voice as I said, I already did that, remember? He laughed humorlessly.
I told you that you should have let me stay dead.
And what about that? Would that have been worth it? Another question I immediately knew I shouldn't have asked. Another wound, another stab of pain.
To die? Rather than killing you?
He said quietly.
Yes, that would have been worth it. Even I had to draw a line somewhere. And you're the line, Araya.
Mother, I was a fucking masochist. Asking questions with answers I didn't know what to do with. He cleared his throat, as if to scrape away the uncomfortable sincerity of those confessions. I need to adjust your wings. Can you lift them a little? I tried to do so, wincing. What I'd intended to be a stretch became an awkward lurch, and the bed creaked as Rain's weight fell back.
Careful, princess. You're going to take my eye out.
They don't listen to me, I snapped.
You're just adjusting to having two new giant limbs stuck to your back. When I first got mine, I could barely even walk properly. Just kept drifting to the sides because the weight threw me off.
I couldn't help it. That image made me chuckle.
Sure, laugh, he grumbled. We'll see what your walking looks like soon. Here, I'll write if I help.
I hesitated, then nodded.
It's hard at first to figure out how to isolate the right muscles, but
gently, so gently, his hands moved to the underside of my wings where they met my back.
You're stiff. If you relax your muscles, they won't fall off. I know it feels like they will.
His hands slid up, applying gentle pressure along the way, coaxing them to spread. My instinct was to move them myself, but Rain said,
"Don't you dare. I don't want to get stabbed in the eye again. Just relax."
Another stroke at that tight knot of muscle. I twitched as his thumb ghosted over my skin. He stopped immediately.
Did that hurt?
I didn't answer right away. No. No. It was the opposite of hurt. Awkwardly so.
Do you want me to stop?
Say yes. But it had been more than a month since I had felt safe, longer than that since a touch had felt comforting. I found myself answering, no. He resumed, slow, running along the muscle. Even through the thin layer of my shirt, I could feel the warmth of his hands, the roughness of his calluses.
Just let go of it,
he said softly.
Let me support the weight of them. I've got you.
As if he could hear the inner fight I was having with my subconscious. And slowly, slowly, with the help of his hands bracing beneath my wings, the muscles relaxed.
There you go, he said. Not so hard.
I didn't speak, mostly because I didn't have words for how good it felt to have someone else bear some of that burden. I hadn't realized how heavy it was until the weight was lessened. Suddenly, I was exhausted. Rain's touch traveled farther up, where the limb gave way to the delicate, softer skin of the wing. I stiffened. Right away, he withdrew his hands.
Did I hurt you?
I was so grateful he couldn't see my face. It felt hot. No, it's fine. He hesitated. Then his hands fell back to my wings, light and gentle.
Open for me, he said.
I didn't even have to tell my body to obey. They just unfolded beneath that barely there touch like flower petals.
Beautiful,
Rain murmured, as his fingertips ran all the way up the soft, sensitive underside. This time, the pleasure was unmistakable. No longer hidden beneath the surface, no longer ignorable. This was intense. A shiver that ran up my spine, up my inner thighs into my core. Like his mouth had once felt on my throat or my earlobe. Like desire incarnate, echoing in my entire being. My exhale trembled. Touch had become something constantly violent, constantly painful. Not this. This was... fuck, it was dangerously good. In Rain's sudden stillness, I knew he had realized what I was feeling.
Good?
He asked, voice thick, asking for permission. Because like me, he knew that this was far more treacherous than pain. Pain was simple. Pleasure was complicated. If I told him to stop, he would, without question. And if I was a stronger person, I would have done just that. I wasn't a stronger person. I was weak.
Yes, I said. Don't stop.
He let out a tiny sound that sounded unintentional, almost a groan. His fingers continued their dance, fingernails slightly dragging against the underside of my skin, my body acutely aware of every stroke, like he knew where all of my nerve endings were and exactly how to caress them. My breath was growing shallow, my face flushed. He hit upon an especially sensitive spot, and I let out an involuntary, choked sound, a whimper. He laughed softly.
There, huh?
Goddess, yes, there.
He lingered in that spot, swirling around it. The pleasure rolled over my entire body, every nerve reacting to those little touches, wanting more, begging for it. My teeth clenched, biting back whimpers. I didn't know why I tried. Surely he could hear my heartbeat, smell my arousal. When he dragged his fingernails across my skin, the almost moan that slipped from my teeth was too sudden to control. He made a returning sound, too. Something between a growl and a groan. And suddenly, I was slumped back against him, the hard muscle of his body against my back.
I dream about that sound.
His mouth was so close to my throat. I could feel his voice vibrate on my flesh right against the scar that he'd left.
Do you know that?
His fingers danced along my wings again, and I barely even tried to hide my moan this time. My breasts ached, sensitive against the fabric of my shirt. I wanted the clothing gone. Mine, his. I wanted his skin. I wanted his breath. Mother, I craved that. I craved it so much that right now, I couldn't even hate myself for wanting him so much. And yet, I didn't want this to go any further than this. This touch, his mouth near my throat, and his body close to mine.
When I went into that room,
he murmured,
I thought you were dead. I thought I'd lost you, Aurea. I thought I'd lost you.
His voice was far too raw, like an open wound, cracked and bleeding. It touched me in places I didn't expect. Places more sensitive than his hands on my wings. He was my enemy. He would kill me if he had the chance. He was my enemy. Would be a relief for you, I said. A lot of problems solved. He went rigid. Suddenly, his hand was at my face, tilting my head back to meet his eyes. They were furious.
Stop saying things like that.
Why? I whispered, knowing I was taunting him, knowing I was, once again, asking a question I didn't want the answer to. His forehead lowered. Our faces were so close I could feel his breath, shallow and quick.
Because I'm so tired, Aurea.
His mouth brushed over the tip of my nose. Almost a kiss. Not quite.
I'm so tired of pretending. Tired of pretending I don't think about you every night. That I've ever wanted anything.
His throat bobbed, and he closed his eyes as if he needed a moment to collect himself. His fingers found that spot on my wings again, dragging across it so agonizingly slowly, and I let out a trembling breath that made him lean a little closer, like he wanted to capture that sound on his lips.
I'm exhausted, princess,
he groaned.
So damned tired.
It sounded like a plea, like he was begging me for an answer, a solution. And I hated that I recognized it, because I felt it too. It was exhausting to be this sad all the time, to feel so angry, to resist constantly. Just as tiring as carrying the wings on my back. A part of me wanted to give in, let myself feel something more than nothingness or sadness or anger. Let him touch me, taste me, fill me. Fuck him until I didn't feel anything but pleasure. It had worked before. For a little while. but so much had changed since then. Because when I closed my eyes, I wouldn't see pleasant visions of Rain's naked body or his kisses or his affection. I would still see his bloodied form on the ground. I would still see him killing my father. I would still see my blade in his chest. I pulled away, just enough to put some distance between us, and I saw Rain's expression settle into serious understanding. A mirror of my own realization, reality seeping in. The haze of pleasure and comfort was starting to fade. I already mourned it. "I was selfish," he murmured, "the day we had together. I was willing to let you use me to escape. I did that knowing that if you knew the truth of why I was there, you'd hate me for it, and that was wrong. I thought I'd die in that ring, and it would be over, and you would never know, but..." It was amazing how fast it happened. Like a flame drenched in frigid water. The sudden wave of anger was coldly all-consuming. "And what the hell was that supposed to be?" I said. "Was that supposed to be a mercy? You dying for me?" His face shifted, a line between his brows. I dream about my blade going into your chest every fucking night, Rain." "Too much. Don't show him this." But it was too late. The words poured out of me, hot and scalding. "You made me kill you," I ground out. "You made me do what you couldn't do. For the second time in my life, I bit down on those words so hard my teeth drew blood from my tongue. I turned away, but it was too late to avoid seeing the realization fall over Rain's face as he touched his chest right where my blade had pierced it. Shame flooded me. Mother, what the hell kind of daughter did that make me? What kind of queen?
Aurea.
Rain started, and I cringed, bracing for his words. But then a knock rang out at the door. He didn't move. I could feel his eyes staring into my back. Another knock, louder. Rain? Misha's voice came from the hall. Are you in there? Still silence. Then he finally rose. I didn't look up, though I heard the door open and Misha's bright greeting. Oh, you're up. I couldn't look at her. I didn't want her to see this too.
What is it?
Rain's voice was hushed. A beat of silence as Misha undoubtedly put things together.
It's from Vale,
she said, matching his tone.
There's a problem in Sivrenage.
Rain let out an exhale that was a wordless curse.
I know, right?
She sighed.
Those fucking bastards.
Chapter 28. Rain. Those fucking bastards, I muttered. Misha agreed. I read the letter again, fingers crumpling the parchment around Vale's words. The tentative peace after my performance at the nobles' meeting could only get us so far, apparently. There had been rumblings of unrest near Sivrenage, with some of the smaller Rishon nobles not only refusing to send their troops, but actively undermining Vale's efforts. I had my fair share of flaws, but naivete wasn't one of them. I knew that sooner or later, probably sooner, this was going to happen. Vale didn't directly spell out that he thought Simon Vassaris was responsible. But I knew what my suspicions were, figured we'd deal with Aurea's spurned would-be heir, and then have to deal with mine.
So?
One word, and I already was dreading what Misha was going to say next.
What was that?
She asked, very casually. What? I said, even though I knew what.
What I walked in on.
I had a headache. I didn't want to think about what that had been, mostly because I myself didn't know. I didn't want to think about Aurea's moans, or her skin, or that brief moment of vulnerability, or the hurt in her eyes. Nothing, I grumbled.
Didn't look like nothing.
It was a mistake. All of it. You made me do what you couldn't, she'd said, with actual tears in her eyes, an expression so raw and open. She had no idea, I was certain, how transparent she was, all that pain floating right to the surface. I felt so stupid, so unimaginably stupid. Until this moment, I hadn't realized what I'd done. Here I was thinking that I'd made this great, noble sacrifice, thinking that I had saved her or tried to, even if my plan had gone differently than I'd hoped. It hadn't. I'd just given her something else to have nightmares about. I'm going to leave tomorrow, I said. At sundown. I didn't look up from the letter, an attempted signal of I don't want to talk about it to Misha, but of course it went ignored. I could still feel her disapproving stare. Rain, nothing to say, Mish. Bullshit. Then again for emphasis. Bullshit. You've got away with words. Anyone ever tell you that? Look at me. She snatched the letter from my hands, stepping in front of me. Her eyes were so big that I could practically see fire reflected in them, sometimes when she was really pissed. So what's your plan? She said. What's the next step? Oh, I don't know. I thrust a palm at the letter. Go behead all of my enemies and see if there's a kingdom left when I'm done, I suppose. First of all, you aren't going to be able to do anything with all of this power until you stop resenting it. I made a choking sound that was almost a laugh. It took every shred of my self-control to keep my mouth fucking shut, because nothing good was about to come out of it. Stop resenting it. I loved Misha, loved her deeply. But the fact that she could even say that with a straight face infuriated me. Of course I resented it. I'd been forced into this position, forced into it partially by her. And second, she went on, her face and voice softening. You can't just run away from her. She needs you. I scoffed again at that. This time, the sound was more pained than angry. She needs someone, Rain. Misha said. She's really alone. That part, that was true. Araya did need someone. I sighed. I know. But that person should not be me. It felt silly to voice that. I couldn't bring myself to, not in those words, even though it now seemed clearer than ever. Don't abandon her, Misha said. She isn't Nessunin. It's not going to end the same. She's stronger than that. I shot Misha a warning look. Strange how even after hundreds of years, the mere mention of Nessunin's name was like a finger against a crossbow trigger, sending a bolt of regret through my chest. No. Araya isn't like Nessunin. And you aren't Neculi. Damn right I'm not, I muttered. Though I sounded less convinced than I'd like. I wasn't like him. So why did I feel him shadowing my every move these last few months? Let her in, Rain, Misha said softly. I rubbed my temple. I don't even know what you're talking about. Bullshit, yes, you do. I caught my snappish response in my teeth. Isn't that a little hypocritical coming from you, the girl who locks up every time anyone tries to ask you anything fucking real? But that was a childish response. None of this was about Misha. Maybe it wasn't even about Araya. Everyone has abandoned her, Misha murmured, her eyes sad. Everyone. I'm not abandoning her. My words were sharper than I'd meant for them to be. I made vows. I'm not doing that. Your soul is my soul. Your blood is my blood. Your heart is my heart. I'd been struck by it even that night, the way those words felt rolling over my tongue with so much weight. It would be so much easier if this was the game that I tried too hard to convince everyone else it was. But I knew deep down the truth of what this was. I could lie to everyone else, but I wasn't good at lying to myself, not even when I wished I could. I turned away, studying the rolling dunes outside the window, my arms over my chest. The view was beautiful, but within a few seconds it blurred to the image of Araya's pained face. Her face the night of the Qajari. Her face on our wedding day. Her face when she'd sobbed at the top of that tower in Lahore. Her face just now, on the verge of tears. I had fucked up. From the first moment I'd seen Araya ready to throw herself into a pack of drugged vampires to save her blood vendor friend, I'd been fascinated by her. I told myself it was just curiosity at first. Totally practical interest in Vincent's human daughter. That pretense didn't last long. No, I'd never been very good at lying to myself. Never even bothered trying to tell myself that the only reason I kept Araya around was because of what she could offer me. I thought I could, I said, finally, not looking away from the dunes. My voice caught in my throat a little. I thought I could... I don't know. Save her? Those weren't the right words. Araya didn't need to be saved. She just needed a soul beside her on the dark walk to her own potential. Someone to protect her until she was strong enough to save herself. I settled on. I thought I could help her. Keep her safe. You can. You are. I don't know about that. I turned. Misha had fallen back into the armchair, her knees drawn up to her chin, her eyes wide and rapt. No one listened quite like Misha. I hurt her, I choked out. So fucking badly, Mish. The wrinkle between Misha's brows softened.
You did, she said softly. So what are you going to do about it?
I had thought I'd known the answer to that question. I'd give her everything that had been taken away from her. I'd hand her the power that Vincent had tried to keep away from her entire life. I'd protect her, defend her, arm her. It felt like the only right thing to do, and the world didn't deserve Araya. But what a magnificent thing she could become. I wanted to see that. What the hell was the point of any of this if I couldn't do that, right this one wrong? But now doubt crept into the dark corners of those thoughts. Maybe I shouldn't be the one doing any of those things. I turned back to the window. I'm going back to Sivrinaj on my own, I said. Araya shouldn't travel that fast yet. I'll have some of Keturah's men escort you two back later. Misha leapt up.
What? You are not heading back there alone, Rain.
Work on her magic with her. You're better at that than me anyway. And when Keturah gets here, she can teach her how to disappear her wings.
Rain,
I don't have time to wait, Misha, I snapped. Then I let out a breath and said more gently, do this for me, all right? Watch out for her. Like you said, she needs someone. Misha's face softened, though I could still see the conflict in it, torn between letting it go and pressing. All right, she said at last, though she didn't sound convinced. I left as soon as night fell the next day. I said goodbye to Misha, who vocally and emphatically disagreed with my decision to leave early. I shut down the argument fast. When I went to Araya's door, no one answered my knock. She was in there, of course. Nowhere else for her to go. And anyway, I could smell her. I could always smell Araya's blood, the pulse of it. I could hear her in there, too, faint rustling of blankets on the bed. I knocked again. Third time, I decided I'd just let it go. I knocked one more time and...
What?
Downright vitriolic. I couldn't help but let a little smile tug at the corner of my mouth. There she is. I opened the door and peered in. She sat on the bed with a book, cross-legged, her wings slightly unfolded behind her. I took a careful assessment of her in that split second. Eyes, skin, wings, wounds. The wounds looked better than they had the night before. Wings looked a bit more relaxed, too. I'd practically ached on her behalf yesterday, just feeling the strain of those muscles. The tension, I was sure, long predated the wings. Aurea was always trying hard to bear all that armor. I knew she'd been holding those shields up for 20 years. I was staring. Aurea looked unamused.
What?
She barked again. I smiled at her. You're so charming, princess. She stared at me. I'm leaving, I said. She blinked twice, a little too fast. Her face changed, grumpiness shifting to... My brow twitched. Look at that face, I said. If I didn't know any better, I'd say you were worried.
Why?
She asked, voice tight.
Where are you going?
Back to Sivernage.
Why?
I gave her a tight smile that was more of a baring of teeth. Because Rishon nobles are fucking pricks. Could practically hear Karis scolding me for even giving her that much information. Information that could be used against me. Her expression shifted again. Disapproval. Hell, maybe hatred. She tried to tamp it down and failed, of course.
Oh.
Misha is staying here with you and some of the guards. I nodded to her wings. Keep those out for now. Keturah will be here in a few days. She can teach you how to get rid of them. Not hard once you get the hang of it. She stared at me, wrinkle between her brows, saying nothing. Try to contain your excitement at my departure, I said flatly. I glanced at the table. An empty bowl sat there, scraped clean. I couldn't help feeling some satisfaction at that. Aurea still said nothing. I wasn't quite used to her being so quiet. Well, that's it, I said. Take care of yourself. See you in a few weeks. I started to close the door, but she said,
Rain.
I stopped mid-swing, peered back in. She had leaned forward slightly, her lips pressed together as if in protest against whatever thrashed behind them.
Thank you, she said. For fixing my wings.
My fingers tightened around the doorframe, as if that was something to thank me for. Common decency. Like I said, you were made for the sky, I said. Would be an injustice to let that be taken away. The faintest hint of a smile brushed her mouth, a glimmer of sun through the clouds. Then it faded as her eyes went distant. I wondered if she was thinking of Vincent. She blinked that expression away fast.
Safe travels,
she said flatly, turning back to her book. I gave her a faint smile. Thanks. I left around midnight that night, armed to the teeth with two of Katora's guards with me. Not enough, Vale would have said, but I'd rather leave the rest for Aurea and Misha. Both of them were forces to be reckoned with, certainly, but Aurea was injured and Misha... Well, it seemed like I saw more burn scars on her arms every time I looked at her. I looked back one last time before we flew away. Immediately my eyes floated up to the second floor of the little cottage, where a set of moon-silver eyes stopped my heart in its tracks, just like they did every damned time. Aurea leaned against the window frame, arms crossed. When my gaze met hers, she lifted one hand in an almost wave. It felt like some kind of small victory. I waved goodbye to her, and then I was gone.
Part 4. Half Moon. Interlude. Time is cheap for vampires. The slave learns this quickly. As a human, he'd felt every passing second, missed opportunity slipping by as if swept away by an eternally rushing river. Humans mourn time, because it's the only currency that really matters in a life so short. There are many things about this new life that the slave despises. but of all he grieves for his fading humanity, the loss of time's mark is the most devastating. A life in which nothing means anything is not a life at all. Years blur by like wet paint drowned in the rain, drenching a forever blank canvas. The vampires of the king's court revel in this agelessness. Centuries of life had dulled the common pleasures, making their tastes extreme and cruel. Sometimes humans are the subject of this cruelty. Other times human lives are too short and fragile. Turned vampires, then, are the next best thing. Durable, longer-lived, but every bit as disposable as the humans they once were. The slave is nothing special. He's not the only turned among the king's collection. He's not even a particular favorite. Time and boredom had driven the king to accumulate a well-curated menagerie of entertainment, men and women of every build, appearance, and origin. The slave does try, truly try, to hold on to his humanity. But it slips away from him day by day anyway. Soon he cannot remember how long it has been since he was turned. When he thinks of his life from before, it feels as if he is thinking about an old friend, distant, fond memories. He watches the sunrise every day until the rays of light bite into his skin. Days became weeks, became years, became decades. Later, he will try and fail to describe in words the extent of his degradation during that time. To those who surrounded him, he was a collection of skin and muscle, an object, a pet, not a person. When this is what you are told for years, it becomes easy to believe it. It becomes easier to survive if you believe it. Only one person treats him differently. The king's wife is a quiet woman with big, dark eyes. She rarely speaks, and she rarely leaves her husband's side. In the beginning, the slave assumes she is just the same as all the others. But later, he begins to see her as a fellow victim of her husband's cruelty. Silent camaraderie in his blows, his ownership, his commands. It stays that way for a long time. Then one day he finds himself alone with her. He had been beaten badly that day, punishment for some imagined disobedience. When the others leave the room, he remains behind, bandaging his wounds with the rote routine of something he has done 1,000 times before and will do 1,000 more. She remains too. She does not say a word. She just takes the bandages from him and winds them around the injuries he cannot reach. He pulls away at first, but she is gently persistent. Eventually, he relents. When she's done, she rises and leaves without a word. He has forgotten what it feels like, a kind touch. It hurts more than one might think. He can feel her hands on him for the rest of the night. It terrifies him because he knows now he cannot forget it. It starts like that. They inch closer over months, years, comforting each other in the wake of the king's cruelty. It takes months before they speak to each other, but the words matter less than the kindness. The line was crossed that first night, that first gentle touch. Everything after feels inevitable. In a dark world, eyes naturally find the light. She becomes the brightest thing in his. By the time their silent meetings become meandering conversations, they had already long since jumped from the cliff. By the first time he kisses her, mouth still stained with blood by her husband's hand, they are already rushing towards the ground. By the time they make love, they are so desperate for companionship, they don't even care about the inevitable crash.
Chapter 29. Araya. Time went on in mundane placidity. It seemed silly that this house should feel so empty without Rain. Misha talked constantly, and was extra talkative now that I was her only companion. At least, the only one that actually engaged with her. Keturah's guards, forever stoic.
Still, I couldn't shake this feeling of a missing puzzle piece. A silence between breaths that I wished would be filled. We fell into an easy routine. Healing, training, resting, repeat. Misha was a good teacher, though training with her reminded me too much of the time we had spent working on our magic together during the Kajari. Then, Misha had only been one half of my instruction. The other had come from Vincent, whose teaching style had been the opposite of hers in every way. Rigid commands and control to counter every instance of Misha harping on about opening one's heart and soul. To return to one without the other highlighted the shape of his absence. A wound that, unlike the ones on my wings, felt like it would never heal. In our rest time, we examined the pendant. Misha was not only a talented magic user, but well-read in sorcery and magical history. Still, even between the two of us, we couldn't make much sense of what the thing was or what it did. I was the only one who could touch it, though it wasn't especially pleasant, making Vincent's presence feel far too close, even more than his sword did. The best Misha could figure was that it was just a piece of something larger, perhaps a key or a compass, or a device intended to enhance the power of something else. Not a power in itself, she theorized, but something designed to unleash another. But even these thoughts were just guesses, frustratingly rooted as much in luck as in fact. At nightfall and dawn, Misha tended to my wounds, which continued to improve dramatically with each passing day. None of the treatments were as painful as that first one. None, thankfully, were as pleasurable either. One day, as she observed the remaining wounds, she remarked,
"You already look so much better. This stuff must be worth whatever Rain went through to get it."
"Whatever he went through?" I repeated.
"It wasn't easy to find, but he was determined."
A pause, then, more tentatively,
"He was so worried. We thought..."
"I thought I lost you,"
Rain had said, the words shuddering along my skin. I was suddenly very uncomfortable with this line of conversation. "He's got to protect his asset," I muttered, even though the words tasted bitter, even though I knew it wasn't true. Misha sighed, dabbing at the last wound on my left wing.
"Rain has a lot of flaws, Araya," she murmured. "But he knows how to love."
I didn't know what to say to that. I wasn't sure what it meant, but I couldn't think of anything at all.
"You're blocking it," Misha said for the 15th time that day.
I gritted my teeth and tried to ignore her. Since I'd received my air mark, my magic had become undoubtedly more powerful. I could feel it constantly thrashing under my skin. But with that power came more volatility than I knew how to control. Like every time I used it, I had to tap into something viscerally painful. Right now, the pressure built, sharper and sharper, like a blade slowly parting skin.
"Keep going," Misha said.
Her voice was distant over the sound of my blood rushing in my ears.
"Don't let go of it."
A bead of sweat dripped down my nose. Despite Misha's commands, I could still hear Vincent in my ear, too.
"Focus, control, willpower."
Lately, his voice had become an unwelcome visitor. The night fire sputtered and roared, threatening to either spin out of control or wither away completely as I balanced on the edge between shutting myself off and falling into a pit of emotion I couldn't confront.
"Where do you want me to go?"
Vincent whispered.
"I'm a part of you, and isn't that what you've always wanted?"
Once, I had wanted nothing more than I wanted to be Vincent. Even now, a part of me still wanted it. Even knowing how he had lied to me, knowing what he had done to my family and his, knowing the brutality he had inflicted upon people just like me for centuries. I was ashamed of it.
"Ashamed?"
Vincent said.
"I made you everything that you are, and you say that you are ashamed of me?"
That one was a memory, one of the last things he had said to me. The nightfire flared, spinning out of control. Misha took a step back. I struggled to wrangle it, struggled to fight back the war of shame and guilt in my head. But when I was using magic, everything came so much closer to the surface. It was Vincent's magic, after all. His blood that gave me this power, his air mark that intensified it. I could not wield it without feeling his presence breathing down my throat.
Keep going,
Misha urged, though I could barely hear her. My eyes burned against the blinding white of the night flame. In that light, I saw Vincent's bloody face in those final moments, always so real, no matter how many times I tried to forget it. The voice in my ear whispered his final words.
So many regrets in the end. Never you.
I couldn't do this. Goddess, I couldn't do this. Stop. I severed myself from all those unwelcome memories. The nightfire guttered out. Suddenly, my knees were in the damp dirt. My breath was painful, coming in deep, raspy gasps.
Oh, gods.
Misha knelt before me, her hands at my shoulders. I leaned against them without meaning to, silently grateful for the stabilizing force.
You're all right, she murmured. It's all right.
I didn't know why her voice sounded like that. So pitying. Until something wet hit my splayed hand. I blinked down at it, confused, and another spot joined it. Tears. Fuck. My face grew hot. I'm fine. Let's just go again. I stood and turned away, swaying a little on my feet. It was hard to pull myself together once I'd started to break. Like all that pressure was building up right under the surface. That was how I'd ended up sobbing in front of Rain. And now Misha. Great. I'm fine, I said. Misha said softly,
You don't have to be fine.
She said it so simply, like it was just a truth, nothing to be judged or disagreed with. I knew that she believed it. And in this moment, I loved her fiercely for that, even if I couldn't bring myself to. I had a kingdom relying on me, and a crown waiting for me, and people who needed me to become something better than this immediately. And what had I done? Lodged a single failed attack? Found a pretty necklace I couldn't figure out how to use?
Araya.
Misha touched my shoulder. I didn't turn. I couldn't show her my face. Perhaps she knew this because she didn't try to make me, only offering me that one touch. So light, I could move away if I wanted to.
Magic is like a living thing, she murmured. I guess it makes sense that it comes from the gods, because it's just as fickle and temperamental as they are. Yours feeds on your emotion. It makes you reach into things that are hard right now. But one day, the things that are the most painful are going to be a source of strength.
I glanced down at Misha's hand on my shoulder and the several inches of her wrist visible beneath her sleeve. The scars covered nearly all her exposed skin. Had they been that bad before? Or had she just been incessantly trying and failing to use her magic ever since her god abandoned her? Maybe my profile revealed the question I didn't ask, because she removed her hand and pulled her sleeve down as I finally turned to face her.
Don't think I don't understand what it feels like to lose something, she said.
When I'd first met Misha, it might have been easy to dismiss her as some pretty, vapid thing. But every so often, I glimpsed something so much harder under the surface. Now, that shadow passed over her face, a glint of blade-sharp steel hidden in the flower garden. Can I ask you a question? I said. She hesitated, then nodded. What was it like to turn? Her face darkened.
It was hard, she said. I would have died if Rain hadn't found me.
He saved you. That shadow parted, just enough to let a little sad smile slip through.
Mm-hmm. He saved me, I don't really remember it. One minute, I'm very sick in the middle of the desert, and I'm... Her expression shuddered, and she cut herself off. Then, I'm waking up in some shitty inn with a giant grumpy stranger. That, let me tell you, was a hell of a confusing moment. I could imagine. You were a priestess, I said carefully. Right? The smile faded. She tugged at her sleeve again and didn't say anything for a long, long moment. I'm sorry, I said. That was... No. No, it's fine. She shook her head as if pulling herself from her haze. Yes, I was. A priestess of Atroxus. It's just... It's hard for me to talk about it sometimes. She gave me another weak smile. Hypocritical of me, right? No, I said. It isn't. Magic is... I know some people think it's just another discipline, but I think it lives close to our hearts. I think it draws right from our souls. Mine has always been close to me. And I... Her jaw snapped closed, eyes shining. It's all right, I said quickly. I shouldn't have asked. It was downright painful to see Misha on the verge of tears. But she laughed and wiped her face with the back of her hand. This is what I mean, Araya, she said. We've all got our reckoning. My turning wasn't my choice, and it broke me. Rain's was his, and maybe it broke him even more. Maybe the others don't let you see the shards. Maybe they don't show you the things they mourn. Does it mean it's not there? Does it mean they don't feel it? And your father? Her face went serious now, fiery, fierce. Her hand fell to mine, clutching it tight. Your father, Araya, felt all those things too. He was just as broken as the rest of us, and he was so determined not to acknowledge it that he flayed you with those sharp edges and then berated you for having skin instead of steel. My throat was tight. Grief and fury surged up it before I could stop myself. Don't talk about him that way, I said. But my words were weak and pleading. Misha just looked at me sadly. You and Rain are always trying to be like them, she said. I don't understand it. You're better than him. Don't forget that, Araya. Embrace it. She was wrong, but she didn't give me time to tell her so before she threw her arms around me in a brief, fierce hug. We'll try again tomorrow, she said, released me, and strode back into the house without another word. Days passed. Our routine continued. Keturah arrived from Lahore, tired and battle-weary. She told us that the city had fallen into significant disarray with Evelina dead, and it had taken some time to get things under control there. It was already in significant disarray, Misha pointed out, which was very true, and I shuddered to think of how much worse it could have gotten. Keturah added another teacher to my daily training routine, teaching me how to appear and disappear my wings, now that they were healed enough. She, at least, provided a more familiar instruction compared to Misha's cheerful style. Harsh, barked commands that made me appreciate just how brutal of a commander she must be to her soldiers. Still, she was effective. A week later, and I was semi-reliably able to conjure and spirit away my wings on command. But uneventful as this time was, day by day, the signs of Misha's unease slowly grew more obvious. I'd often catch her staring out the window, a little wrinkle between her eyebrows, rubbing the scars on her wrists. I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel it too. It was too quiet, like we were trapped behind glass, frozen in artificial tranquility while darkness encroached on the horizon. One day, when Misha finished tending to the much improved wounds on my wings, I said, I think it's time for us to go back to Sivrinaj. She paused before answering. Rain told us to wait until he sent for us. I scoffed, and have you heard from him? That was an intentionally stupid question. I knew she hadn't,
Her quiet anxiety told me that.
I told myself this was why I knew, and not because I'd been watching for his letter just as closely.
Misha looked torn.
You want to go, I said. So let's go.
What, Rain's king now, so he gets to tell us both what to do? Fuck him. I'm the queen. My say counts just as much.
I said it very confidently, even though we both knew it wasn't that simple.
Still, at that, she cracked a smile.
I like that attitude.
I knew she was going to agree. This was, after all, the girl who had run off and joined the goddess-damned Qajari in order to force Rain's hand. But maybe it was a testament to her friendship with Rain and her respect for him that she still had to think about it for a long moment. But her impatience won out.
Fine,
she said eventually, just like I knew she would.
You're right. We can't just wait around here forever.
Chapter 30. Araya.
Rain didn't look happy to see us. He hadn't been expecting us to turn up when we did, clearly, even though Keturah had written before we left. The journey was long, especially because we traveled on horseback instead of straining my wings by flying the whole way, for which I was reluctantly grateful. We arrived at Sivernage nearly a week later, tired and travel-stained, and taken to Rain's study to wait for him. When he opened the door, followed by Vale, Kyrus, and Septimus, he paused in the frame for a moment, as if caught off guard by our presence. We stared at him, too, just as shocked by his, because he was covered in blood. It clearly wasn't his. Spatters of red-black dotted his face and hands, smeared on his fingertips, clinging to his unbound hair. He wore the fine clothes that he always donned in the castle, though they were disheveled, wrinkled on the sleeves where he'd pushed them up to his elbows. It wasn't hard to piece together what he'd just been up to. He had rebels to deal with. Rebels needed to be questioned and punished. Rain, I knew, was not the type to let others deal with his dirty work. I'd grown so accustomed to seeing the different masks he'd worn over these last few months. The charmer, the king, the cold-blooded tyrant. Now, at the sight of him like this, blood-covered, hair wild, that just-killed sheen in his eye, a visceral familiarity wrenched through me, like we were in the Qajari all over again. I wondered if he was thinking the same thing, because the slow wolfish grin that spread over his lips echoed the one he used to give me in those trials, even if, this time, it took a little too long to reach his eyes.
You two, he said, weren't supposed to be back yet. I tell you to do one thing, and that thing is just don't do anything, and you still can't bring yourselves to listen to me.
Misha's nose wrinkled.
You look disgusting.
If I'd known you were coming, I'd have taken a bath.
No, I don't think you would have.
She looked him up and down.
Long day, huh?
The smile softened.
Long week. Long month.
Then his gaze shifted to me. For a split second, it was just as exposed, revealing just a glimpse of too many emotions. Then the mask was back up, the role reassumed.
I take it you're feeling better.
Better enough?
He eyed my wings. His face remained blank, but I still saw the faint glimmer of concern. Felt it, like I'd felt his hands on them. He wasn't the only one staring. Vale, Kyrus, and Septimus were transfixed by those wings too, and didn't bother to hide it. Nor did they hide their wary curiosity, like they were trying to reconcile something that didn't make sense. The wings were a symbol of my power. Vincent only left his visible when he needed to remind the world he was the king of the House of Night, and mine were a near-perfect replica of his, that deep black, that blinding air red. I'd made it easy for them to ignore my air mark, hiding it beneath high-necked clothing, but right now, there was no ignoring the wings. Septimus smiled, taking a puff of his cigarillo.
You do carry them better when you're conscious,
he said.
I didn't like thinking of Septimus seeing me unconscious.
Rain didn't seem to like it much either, because he took a step closer to me, as if putting his body between us.
Misha glanced between all of us quietly, noting the obvious awkwardness before another cheerful grin broke over her face.
We're starving, she said. Can we eat?
It took a few solid seconds after Misha's declaration for me to realize that a vampire had said the word starving in my presence, and not a single one of them had so much as glanced at me.
Maybe I really was becoming a vampire after all.
Rain wiped the blood off his face with the back of his hand, or tried to, largely unsuccessfully. He scowled down at his blood-smeared hand with wrinkles on his blood-smeared forehead and said,
I've worked up a bit of an appetite, too. If you'll excuse me, Septimus said, breezing by us, I'll pass on dinner. Busy night, I'm afraid.
He paused at the doorway, looking back at me.
Good to see you doing better, Aurea,
he said.
We were all very worried.
Sometimes it seemed like the man didn't even have footsteps. He was simply gone, without so much as an echo behind him.
Rain didn't even clean up before we all went to the dinner table. I considered not attending. I still didn't like to be around feeding vampires, vampire blood or no. But when I realized that Vale, Kyrus, and Keturah would be there, the logistical benefit was just too great to pass up. I'd spent far too long wrapped up in my own grief and anger to actually do anything useful, and sitting at dinner with Rain and his highest-ranking advisors was useful. I was, of course, directed to a seat beside Rain, though he barely looked at me when I sat. He seemed to be deliberately paying less attention to me, which was awkwardly noticeable. It had the obnoxious effect of making me more aware of him than I already was. The others were given elaborate plates of bloody rare meat and, of course, enormous goblets of blood, which Misha chugged down immediately. Royal table manners be damned. Rain disappeared for a few minutes as the servants laid the table, then returned. I eyed him. Thought you were going to clean yourself up. Flecks of vampire blood still covered his face. He winked at me.
Don't pretend you're offended by a little bloodshed.
But I knew a message when I saw one. Rain was letting himself be seen as the slaughterer. Someone who killed and didn't even care enough to wipe the remnants of his victim off his face afterwards. So, he didn't trust his own inner circle. Interesting. A few minutes later, my plate was brought out and set before me. I somewhat dreaded digging into the near raw meat that the others had been given, but I also wasn't about to highlight all the ways I was different by turning it away either. But at my first bite, son fucking take me, I must have been hungrier than I'd thought, because this was incredible. I barely stopped myself from letting out an audible noise. Surprise, pleasure, or both? I could feel Rain's eyes on me. I glanced at him. He looked oddly smug. What?
Nothing,
he said casually, and turned back to his food. The realization dawned on me. Oh, for fuck's sake, so he was a good cook. So what? I didn't give him the satisfaction of acknowledging aloud how delicious it was. Didn't stop eating, though, either.
So,
Rain leaned back in his chair, taking a long swig of blood.
Kyrus, you had something you wanted to talk about?
Kyrus glanced around the table, then pointedly at me, and then at Rain.
Here?
Here. I think Vale will be interested in your idea.
Vale looked like he was already dreading whatever this was going to be. His wife, on the other hand, seemed like her interest was piqued. She was a very openly curious person, and I appreciated that. Maybe because it was a deeply human trait. I wondered how much she understood of this conversation. She was a foreigner, and her obitrain, from what I'd heard, was not very strong yet.
If you insist,
Kyra said, and turned to Vale.
We need an event.
Vale stared flatly back at him.
An event. Something big, something with a lot of flash. Something to provide an excuse for us to invite all the nobles to Sivrinaj and flaunt the king's significant and awe-inspiring power and whatnot.
Vale looked unconvinced, and Kyrus leaned across the table.
Wars aren't just fought on the battlefield, Vale.
Unfortunately not, but I'm not thrilled to hear what any of this has to do with me.
The event will be your wedding celebration.
Vale let out a breath through his teeth and an immediate forceful, no.
Come on, Vale.
Rain arched a brow.
You don't want the best party planner in Obitrace throwing your wedding for you?
Despite Rain's joking tone, I got the impression that no one was really giving Vale, or Lilith for that matter, a choice in the matter. Vale gave Kyrus a dagger stare.
We're already married. So what? It's just the celebration.